Hello, welcome to the Raw Podcast. James Copley here, joined by Phil Smith. Phil, how are you doing, mate?
Yeah, cold. It doesn't really feel like April and spring to me at the moment. I'm very, very chilly. But other than that, all fine. I'm ready for some hot takes.
It's very sunny outside, but it is actually quite chilly. You're right, Phil.
It's the wind, isn't it? It's the wind, man. It ruins everything. It's my least favourite of the elements.
Right, we are 50 seconds in, and we've also gone on a we've already gone on a massive tangent. But there we are, there we are. Right, so football, which is what we are here to discuss. We're going to get on to talking about the Leeds United and West Brom games, Mike Dodds. We'll talk about Tommy Watson and his form for the under 21s, and some more general thoughts on Sunderland's youngsters, including Matt Young, who's worked wonders out on loan at Darlington. But Phil, I want to start with Sunderland women, who have two massive games coming up against Charlton and Crystal Palace. If they win both of those, they get promoted from the Championship to the top division in the United Kingdom, which is an incredible place to be, really. And had you asked us if we thought this could happen last summer, we probably would have said no. It's a monumental achievement by Mel Ray.
It is, yeah. I mean, you made it sound very simple there. A little bit of context to these last two games, and that obviously they played Charlton on Sunday, who were third. And then the last game of the season, they were away at Crystal Palace, who are currently top. I mean, it's fantastic for the division, and it's going to be a great spectacle, really. Sunday is a huge game because Crystal Palace probably played their toughest remaining game other than Sunderland on Sunday against Birmingham and beat them, which I think was a massive result because Birmingham, I think, were probably most people's favourites of the division going into the start of the season. So that was a big result for Palace, which puts them 2 points ahead of Sunderland. They play away at Lewis on Sunday. Lewis is second bottom, so I'd expect Palace to win. So realistically, I think Sunderland need to beat Charlton at home to then go into the last game of the season away at Palace with a 2 point deficit, basically knowing that they need to win and take the title. So I think Sunday is a huge game. I think they probably need to beat a strong Charlton side. But having said that, there's absolutely no reason to think they can't go and do that. They have, as you said, overachieved really all season. And I think It's all been about the recruitment to a large extent. I think what we've always known is that Sunderland are very, very good at producing young players. And a lot of the team this season are, you have kind of the core of those young players in place. But what Mel Ray did and Steph Libby did astonishingly well last season was just recruit. They were obviously given a little bit more latitude by the fact that they could hand out some professional contracts for the first time, which enabled Mel and Steph really to use their contacts in the game. And you look at players like Katie Kitchen, Jenna Deer, you know, you could go on and on really. And it's been a remarkable turnaround. And I think the nice thing for me is, like, it feels like, because a lot of these players are contracted for next year as well, I actually feel like even if it doesn't happen in the next couple of weeks, and hopefully it does, I feel like there's some pretty decent foundations. You know, some of the young players are going to go on to move on to professional contracts this summer. Someone like Katie Watson, for example. So there's some really like strong foundations there. Really exciting couple of weeks, and there's no reason to think that they won't get the job done because they've overachieved and sort of proved everybody wrong all season. But I think what's nice is that we can be really sort of enthusiastic about next year regardless. And obviously the one other thing we should mention is that winning the league doesn't necessarily mean you play in the Super League next year. Mm-hmm. Someone will have to earn a license to play in the Super League based on investment facilities, and that's going to be a fair piece of work for the club, and it's going to require pretty significant backing from the ownership. So I would make that point as well. I'm very hopeful that would be the case because they have backed the team so far to get to where they were, which is why they've been able to recruit those players I mentioned. But obviously, it's not quite as straightforward as sort of win the league and you play against the big teams next year. There will be a pretty stringent process in place. And hopefully, if it does come off, the club will have put everything in place to make sure they can go and play at that level. But it feels like the future's pretty bright either way, which is nice.
Given what we've seen from Kyrie Louis-Dreyfus and this ownership on and about Sunderland women, you would expect him to commit if Sunderland did get promoted, Phil, just throwing it forward a little bit. If Sunderland did,
you would hope so. I mean, I think to be fair, that much of that licensing process will already have been be underway. It's something that kind of runs towards the end of the season, so all the sort of background work will be getting done now. But ultimately, it'll be Kirill and Juan who sort of sign off on that, if you like, because the reality is that Sunderland going into the Super League will be, I would imagine, you'd be expecting to incur pretty significant losses at that level because of the way the game's changed. So it would take a big commitment from the ownership, but it's one that they simply have to make because it's one where you speculate to accumulate, really, because the entire prospect of the sort of the women's side of the club will be transformed by being at that level when you think of the broadcasting, the exposure, and the long term, really, in terms of A, giving the young players in the squad now the chance to test themselves at that level is going to stand them in really good stead for the future. And also B, in terms of growing the game within Sunderland and within the region, you know, having Man City, Chelsea, Arsenal, these teams coming to Wearside next season, it's going to be such a huge, potentially a huge boost to sort of growing the interest in the game, growing the attendances, and that's what ultimately will turn it into a sustainable operation in sort of 10 years' time, if that makes sense. So I'm really hopeful there will be that sort of long sight. Is long-sightedness a word? Is that the option? I know short-sightedness is a
word.
We're making it
a word today.
Long-sightedness. Anyway, yeah, I would like to think that that will be in place. But I think if Mel Ray could hear us, she would be saying, hang on, we've got two really difficult games to play first. Let's not get carried away. And Palace have been pretty exceptional all season. You know, you have to look at their goal difference to see how good a team they are and some of the results they've had. So yeah, hopefully we can get three, you know, the sort of the home support can help get 3 points against Charlton. And then, to be fair, you know, if you take it to the last day, you never know, do you? Yeah, you absolutely never know. All it takes is one wonder goal, a set piece, anything. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to see how they do. And yeah, I think the ownership would back them if they won, and I think it would be bitterly disappointing if they didn't. But yeah, you know, let's hope they have that decision to make because someone go and win the next two games.
You mentioned her there, but a quick word for Mel Ray as well, who just continues to be a brilliantly shrewd operator at this level. I've lost count of how many rebuilds she's had to sort of take on at Sunderland with various different factors. We spoke quite a bit in the summer. There was high-profile departures in terms of Niamh Herring. There was players leaving at Newcastle. Maybe slightly worried. Obviously, Sunderland recruited well, but a lot of that is down to her. I know the club's sort of operation has expanded a little bit and she's got a bit more help now, but I think we're really seeing that the fruits of that and of her expertise. She's superb at this level.
Like 100%. And you're absolutely right in what you say. And the sort of expanded operation, we have definitely seen the benefits this season. So some of the more, the bigger coaching staff, sort of some of the specialist coaches, you know, there's now a full-time goalkeeping coach, which you only have to look at what a season Claudia Mohn's had, for example, to see how these little things can make an absolute huge difference. But we shouldn't also be under any illusions about the fact that, you know, while the women's team have been integrated behind the scenes at the academy, there is obviously still a disparity in funding and investment and in resources, and especially in recruitment. I mean, this squad has been built by Mel Ray. Yeah. Their assistant, yeah. Like, it's not the sort of, they don't have access to the scouting network to the same level of data analysis at all. It's about Mel's sort of nous and about the contacts in the game, really. And I don't think anyone would disagree with me when I say that Sunderland have been immensely fortunate to have to have Mel at the helm through the tricky times, really. And she's been the perfect person to sort of lead the rebuild this season. And I think what's exciting as well, I've mentioned a few times about moving ahead to next season, is that what we're actually seeing as well is we're starting to see that a real playing style emerge. I think because of the disparity in resources to some of the other teams in the division, I think Sunderland were a sort of defence first team for quite a long time. They were very dependent on set pieces, which made sense. That's how they were going to get results against other teams. But what we're actually seeing is as the youngsters develop and as the new signings settle as the season's gone on, Sunderland have become more and more aggressive. They're so much better on the ball than any time I've really seen when I've been following them for the sort of last 3-4 years. So what's encouraging to me is, like, yeah, there's a real development there that I'm pretty confident and hopeful will sort of last into next season, whatever happens in the next couple of games. It's a really exciting time to follow the team. And if anyone's sort of wavering or hasn't been Sunday, you know, there'll never be a better time to really, because it's going to be a good game. against a very high calibre opposition, and everything's on the line. You know, Charlton, you know, we talked about some Charlton have to win to stay in the race as well. So yeah, it should be some occasion, I think.
Yeah, and it is a really, really good atmosphere up at Ebbleton for a big game where the women are concerned. I was there for the River Weir Derby, as it's now known, against Durham, which was an absolutely cracking game. 5-3, I think there was over 2,000 people there, and it was superb. There's going to be, you know, the flags from the new flag group as well there this on Sunday. So, yeah, looking forward to that one. We'll move on to Sunderland men's. We've had a draw against Leeds and a win against West Brom. Phil, both away from home, both systems deployed by Mike Dodds were five at the back. We've seen a little bit of a tweak, but really important, I think, to have those performances away from home against good opposition. It's sort of come full circle for him in a way, hasn't it? Given his first stint earlier this season as interim head coach, but pleasing for those away fans, I think, to be repaid with two really strong performances.
Yeah, and I think that was kind of Mike Dodds' main point, actually. We spoke a bit on the whistle, didn't we? Was it after the Leeds game, about how we did feel that whatever people's opinions on Dodds' performance were or his future in sort of the coaching staff, and we discussed the potential challenges of somebody new coming in and sort of inheriting Dodds. But what we both said is we do really feel from our sort of dialogue with Dodds and our experiences that he's someone who does kind of get the club and get the supporters. And I think one of the things he was really strong on, kind of after both games, was, you know, it's not a time for experimenting. And ultimately, I want to be respectful of the fact that even after everything that's gone on, we've got two sold out away ends, you know, going up against two teams who, let's be honest, if someone hadn't been on it, could really have put them to the sword. And so I do think it was kind of refreshing. It was kind of encouraging for me to hear him say that we do want to be more free-flowing. This isn't kind of really where we want to be as a team in terms of the setup and certainly the quality and possession. So I think I would have been more concerned if he hadn't said that, if you like, because I'd be kind of thinking, well, that's great, you've got 4 points, but this isn't really how you're going to get promoted next season. Mm-hmm. So I kind of was encouraged and respected the fact that he said, look, you know, this isn't exactly how I want the team to look. I don't think it's how the players quite want the team to look, but from where we were, especially after the Blackburn game, we needed to put a bit of pride in the shirt, and we needed to give the away fans, you know, something to be proud of, basically. And they did that. You can't say that they didn't do that. In both games, the application was spot on. The organisation was very good. I did think the first half against West Brom was pretty poor up until the red card. Like, it was not a great watch. Leeds, I thought, was a lot better performance because they actually did have a bit of a threat, even if they were kind of sitting off for the most part. I did think on the break they looked quite dangerous. That wasn't really the case at West Brom up until the red card. But the second half, they managed it really well. So I think you've got to give a lot of credit to Dodds. And I don't really have any major qualms with the approach, because I think it was the right thing for the circumstances. And like I say, if you know the mood was, oh, this is what we're going to do now, like this is going to be how we play moving forward, I think I'd have some reservations. But you know, even looking at the fixture list coming up, I think we'll start to see a bit of a shift from Sunderland. And I think, you know, there was a need, I think, to put a bit of pride back in the shirt after the Blackburn game. Mm-hmm. And fair play, you know, they've done that. And if we're honest, at the start of the week, if someone had said 4 points from Leeds and West Brom away, I actually probably would have not believed that. So obviously it's kind of sobering, because we all want someone to be competing for the top, and you don't really feel comfortable saying, oh, well, if we get a win and a draw, then that's good. But objectively, from where someone were, it was a good result. And so I don't think you can quibble too much, really.
What I liked about Dodds from the post-match to the Leeds game was that he came out into a press room full of people who were probably ready to praise him. For getting a point against sort of title chasing Leeds away at Elland Road after such a bad run of form. And he actually came out and said, well, you know, this club shouldn't be celebrating a point. It should always be moving forward. I thought that was quite impressive from him, Phil.
Yeah, definitely. And that's what I was getting back to before, in terms of, I do feel with Dodds, you've got someone who sort of understands the club and understands the expectation and doesn't sort of shy away from it either. You know, he's not someone who's going to come out and talk about the negativity or the pressure or from the fan bases, which is something that we have heard kind of over the years. I think he totally gets that it's a sort of a privilege to be leading the team and to be, you know, to be part of the area in the club. And that's something which I've got a lot of time for. And as you say, I thought he pitched that perfectly when he sort of came in, knowing that he probably could have come and said, oh, given this, you know, what we've had over the last few months, look at how much Leeds' team costs. Like, isn't it amazing that we've got a draw? And it was impressive, but it wasn't amazing because it's Sunderland in the Championship. So they should never be like soaking up too much praise for getting a 0-0 draw, you know? So I thought you were right. I thought you pitched that perfectly. And I think you also have to acknowledge that for most of his tenure, he's been pretty unlucky with injuries and availability. And it's no coincidence, really, that now he's starting to get a few bodies back. Things are starting to improve a little bit. But there's no doubt about it. We're looking for a strong finish now. And I, you know, we certainly want to see a Sunderland in the next few games, especially the two home games, that gets on the front foot and tries to get us off our seats a little bit. But from what he said so far, you know, I'm very hopeful that's going to be what we get. So, you know, there is now a little bit of a chance to, I wouldn't say build a feel-good factor because that's clearly too strong given the way the season's sort of come undone. But there is definitely a chance to send us all into summer feeling a little bit lighter and a bit more optimistic and fingers crossed they can sort of go and grasp that.
And I guess the million-pound question, Phil, which we've sort of alluded to during our On The Whistle videos after games, which are available on YouTube if you want to go back and have a watch or a listen of them, is where does Mike Dodds fit into Sunderland after the summer and who's going to be preferred to come in? It's a really, really interesting question.
Yeah, I think it's fairly well established what's going to happen. He will stay, I think. He was asked by one of the national reporters after the game at West Brom about it, and it was probably the most open he's been on it, really, just in terms of, you know, basically saying first and foremost he's going to have a break and then yeah, he expects, as far as he's aware, to return as part of the coaching staff. And I think every indication we've had from the club really is that they still plan, you know, they want to stick to that plan. When Christian Speakman was asked at the Support Collective meeting last month about, you know, whether what the plans would be for the coaching staff moving forward, he made pretty clear that whoever came in would be able to make, you know, bring someone with them, but they would be expected to work with the coaching staff that are in place. It's very obviously the view of the Sunderland hierarchy that for the players and the playing style, it's important to have some continuity. And there definitely is a fair question about whether some of the bigger names or the kind of top caliber coaches would be comfortable coming into an environment with much of their coaching staff already set for them. I completely get that, and it's a fair argument. But the reality is I think the Sunderland remain very invested in Dodds, and you know, I don't see any scenario really in which he's not part of the coaching group next season. You know, he has said that he's very comfortable with the fact that whoever comes in is going to bring someone with them. He said that was never an issue for him and never would be. You know, he said that he expected Michael Beale to do the same. You know, it wasn't his decision that didn't happen. It was just something that never, I assume, it's just because he wasn't there long enough to get around to it, to be quite honest with you. So I think we have a clear idea of what's going to happen. I think Dodds will stay as part of a, you know, a 4-5 strong coaching team. The question is whether that has any impact on Sunderland's search, you know, and whether it has any impact on who they want to get. That's the bit where we have an unknown. I don't think we have much of an unknown over Dodds' future himself. And the other thing he said in, you know, the pre-match press conference was he also, not, we obviously knew this would be the case, but, you know, he is in the meetings at the moment looking ahead to the summer, and not that he has sort of the final say by any stretch of the imagination. I think he'd be the first to tell you that he has very much not the final say on things, but you know, the fact that his input is being sought and is being listened to, and he's feeding into those early recruitment meetings and what have you, I think that tells you everything you need to know, really.
Is there an argument to suggest, Phil, and this isn't the fault of Mike Dodds at all, but when the new man is appointed as Sunderland's new head coach, you could sort of see the first time he hits a sticky patch or goes through a questionable run of form, then there's always the sort of Mike Dodds spectre lurking in the background because he's taken the team so many times. Again, that's not on Mike Dodds at all. Yeah. But it's an interesting sort of subplot going forward, isn't it?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that's totally fair. And as you said, it's not on Mike Dodds. So I've got to be honest, he's a very personable, diligent sort of character from all my dealings with him. So I don't think it's kind of should be an issue, if you like, but it will be. Like, it's just obvious that there will be, especially because of the fact that he has a long-standing connection to Christian Speakman, which again is not his fault, but it's just a reality. So I think if you were looking at the job from the outside, you would definitely have those reservations. I think that's only human nature, really. So I am interested to see how that sort of shakes out in terms of how that will impact, you know, the candidates for the job. But I suppose the flip side of that is that, you know, the game is changing. Like, there are very, you know, we talked about this a lot with Alex Neil. Like, if you want to be in charge of your entire backroom staff and decide exactly who that's going to be, if you want to have final say on transfers, if you want to sort of set the football and policy, to be honest, there are very few jobs left for you now. Like, someone are not acting wildly out of the norm on this anymore. Like, this is, if anything, it's become even more the norm since they started doing it when Louis Dreyfus and Speakman still came in. So while I think it's like a totally valid point, I think we also sometimes can be a little bit in, I can certainly get into a little bit of a Sunderland bubble. And when you sit back and look at it, you think, well, actually, this kind of thing is happening right across the game. So I do have my reservations about it, especially because I do feel there's a balance. Like, I get the continuity argument. We don't want to overhaul things every time you change a new head coach.
Which was a massive problem for Sunderland and the Premier League, for instance.
Yeah, it absolutely was. The flip side of that is that, to me, like, Michael Beale looked pretty isolated most of the time he was here. Maybe some of the stuff we criticised him for, the press conferences and stuff, maybe he missed someone who he really trusted who could, you know, have a word with him and say, not sure about it. Do you know what I mean? That's me speculating, to be honest.
When your back's up against the wall and you're alone, you're more sort of likely to come out swinging anyway, aren't you?
Yeah, definitely. I think you're more likely to feel sort of insecure. So I do think there's a really difficult balance to be found. But yeah, so going back to your original question, I definitely think it will be a factor in all these discussions that they're having with these head coaches. But again, it's like the weird thing about sort of what Sunderland say, the kind of head coach that we've expected Sunderland to eventually go for is the kind of head coach who's probably already works in this kind of environment. And that's why it would sort of make sense, if that makes sense. But what we haven't really, especially with the Beale one, Sunderland didn't really follow through on what we expected. So that was why the whole thing was just really weird. But I guess the point I'm making is the kind of candidates that I would expect Sunderland to go for, because of what they say they want, which is someone maybe more initially with a coaching background, et cetera, is that you would think they would be relatively comfortable with this kind of thing because that's what they've already been exposed to. But you just, it's weird because I think the Beale thing is like shaking a lot of people's confidence, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's the fundamental thing here, which is even if you disagreed with certain decisions that have been made in the past, not signing the strike or last deadline day or not giving Alex Neil a new contract, et cetera, et cetera. I think there was like this like understanding of, well, whatever my opinions on it, there is a plan here. And the plan has some sound foundations, and that's, the Beale thing, I think, is really shaking people's sort of conviction in it and that side of it, and that's why it's such a important appointment. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. But I think that, you know, the one thing we should definitely say is that I think, and there is a correlation between important players becoming available again and results improving. And we have seen over the last week that whatever your opinions on what should happen next, Dodds has some tactical nous, and he has the respect of the dressing room. Because that Blackburn game, you know, it was a disgrace. No other way to describe it, really. But you don't get the sort of the application that we've seen away at Leeds and away at West Brom, you know, if the coach doesn't have the respect of the dressing room, it just doesn't happen.
No, absolutely. There's a lot of obviously speculation about Sunderland's next head coach. You know, a lot of lists with potential candidates, a lot of talk and a lot of chatter. One name I wanted to talk to you about, Phil, is Danny Rowle at Sheffield Wednesday. I think I find him a really interesting character in a sense that he's done a really good job at Sheffield Wednesday. On the surface of it, when you look at the league table, you might think, what's the hype all about? But when he took the job at Sheffield Wednesday, I don't think they'd won a game or had a couple of points or something like that. And he's got them to within touching distance of staying up. He's done a marvellous job. And I'm not comparing Sheffield Wednesday's ownership to Sunderland's in any way, because I think they are very different. But he sort of proved to me as a head coach that he can work under a very specific set of circumstances when required. And he is very much a coach. And I just wonder if that's an avenue Sunderland will pursue, or somebody of his ilk.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what I was going back to before in terms of making it make sense. So, like, Danny Rowe would make a lot of sense to me. He has what Kirill seems to crave, and what his statement when Tony Mowbray was sacked seems to crave, which is a, and I'm very, very heavy inverted commas here, like an elite coaching pedigree. You know, that seems to be Kirill's sort of primary desire, someone who's worked in a, I'm going to use it again, elite-like environment. And obviously Rowe, who's worked with the German national team, worked at Bayern Munich, he has that. He has an ultra-aggressive playing style. Like, Sheffield Wednesday have not almost got themselves out of trouble by sort of, you know, defending in a low block and nicking set pieces. They have a goal. So again, that ticks the box. And I think what sort of we, because obviously the Sheffield Stars are a paper in our company, and it's clear from our chatting to their writers and reading their stuff and stuff, he has a bit of a charisma about him as well. So that's kind of what we expect Sunderland to do. And so for me, like, he would be an outstanding candidate or someone of a similar pedigree. But what we have this reservation, and it's mainly because of what happened earlier in the season, is like, is the intent there, and is the ambition there from Sunderland to go and do something like that?
Yeah, that will they pay the money to get him?
Yeah, and this question was put to, and all the other stuff as well, not just paying the actual compensation, you know, all the other stuff to go and make a deal of that happen. And we could say, put Will Still in the similar category to go and get him from the French top tier. You know, and the question was put to Speakman again, wasn't it, that support meeting, and he said, you know, finances would be no object. He did say that, you know, paying compensation doesn't mean you get a successful manager, which is obviously true.
Right. Yeah, absolutely right.
But that's absolutely right. But it's also like, let's be honest, it's not really the point, is it? It's like,
no.
You know, because...
Because if you can pay compensation, but you don't to get a worse candidate, then that's not good.
Right. So that's where all of us are kind of going, that's what all of us is sort of... You know, it's really shaking our sort of, like I say, it's shaking the faith in the operation a little bit. And so that's where the interesting dynamic about this appointment is going to be. And it, again, like to emphasize, it's not saying that if they go and get someone who's not in work, it means they made a cheap appointment and they're not ambitious or whatever. It's just like, what I really, really want is to see an appointment that matches up with that statement that Kirill Ludreyfus and Christian Speakman made when they sacked Tony Mowbray, which they then absolutely spectacularly did not deliver on in their subsequent actions. Do you know what I mean? And that's what we're all looking at. And that's why I get a little, that's why I find that these discussions can actually be a little bit difficult from our perspective, because I can give you an idea of what we think Sunderland kind of are going to do based on what they say. And that would be absolutely somebody like Danny Rowe. But after what happened last time, you just kind of go and, but I'm not really sure exactly, you know, what is going on there. So it's going to be really interesting. But for me, like, if you're just asking my sort of honest opinion, like, I would put Rowe up there as an outstanding candidate. Actually, someone like that, I would be really excited by. But you just don't know, do you?
No, you don't. Like, let's move on to our next talking points. Wanted to talk a little bit about Tommy Watson. Phil, he scored again for the under-21s against Middlesbrough last night. Sunderland lost 2-1 at the Stadium of Light. He's got 3-3. He's banging on the door. Mike Dodds has been asked about him a couple of times. He's obviously struggled to break into the first team owing to the fact that Jack Clark's so good and that he had a few injuries earlier on in the season. But with 3 games left to play, Sunderland can't get relegated. They also can't get into the playoffs. You would expect him to come in at some point, you would hope. It makes sense?
Yeah, I think so. I think we discussed this ahead of the Leeds and West Brom. Joe actually, yeah, on the podcast. And I sort of said then, and I did quite strongly feel that, like, Leeds and West Brom, like, it's not the time. To just put people in. And that's not even just in a protecting Dodds or protecting the result, or that's actually protecting the player. Like, I know Chris Rigg played in those games, but Rigg's had a fairly decent taste of it, both in terms of first team training and first team football now. Watson, like, the first half of the season was really badly impacted by the fact that he didn't have much of a pre-season because of injury.
Yep.
He then had another injury, which was the same time when Clark had his ankle injury, wasn't it?
And Robertson at the same time.
Yeah. And he was injured in that point, which is a really important point to make. So he then came back into it and he had to rebuild his fitness, which is why he was playing a lot of under-21s games. Knock-on effect of that is he wasn't always available to train with the first team because he had playing commitments, which he needed to get up to match fitness. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, up until this point, it makes total sense to me that we haven't seen a huge amount of Watson. Like, now I really do feel like, maybe not this weekend, but the last couple of games, I don't see why you wouldn't include him.
Yeah.
I think that there is an argument to say that as it stands, Sunderland have four wingers contracted for next season, Clark, Roberts, Barr and Lundell. So you don't necessarily have to experiment hugely in that position because you have got good young players who you need minutes, like Mundell especially needs some minutes between now and the end of the season. So I do think there's like a balance to be struck. But given the uncertainty over Clark's future and given the fact that, you know, Dak and Burstow, who at the moment seem very unlikely to be here next season, have been in the squads, I really don't understand why you can't give Watson a bit of a go. Even if it's not this weekend, because I know he played last night, didn't he? So whether that'll affect his training with the first team this week, I don't know. We're certainly moving into the last couple of games. I just think it's a little bit of a no-brainer. If, you know, if you're thinking of having a Burstow or a Dak on the bench, you know, why not have a, you know, a Tommy Watson on the bench? Especially because, as we say at the moment, it feels like Clark will be going. So I think like there's a lot of reasons why it hasn't quite happened yet. And I think we should be really careful about just chucking him in the same category as Rig. Yeah. Because mainly for pure fitness reasons, they've been in completely different boats for much of this season, which is not Watson's fault whatsoever. It's just, you know, it's just life. It's just football. Mm-hmm. But if we got to the end of the season and we hadn't seen him, I think I'd be pretty disappointed. You know, we asked Dodds about a couple of weeks ago when he was still coming back to fitness, and he sort of said, I've had a good chat with Tommy, things I really like about his game, things I want him to work on and stuff. Having then scored in pretty much every game since then, like, you'd like to think that, you know, he's sort of given him a bit of a dilemma. So I'm quite confident that we will see him. I do think we'll start to see a little bit of a shift now. I think we might see Dodds be a little bit more. And we have to give Dodds a little bit of credit as well. Like, he picked the perfect moment to bring Pembele into the team. We were all looking at it going, where is Pembele? Why is he not getting a chance? He brought him in when he switched to a back five. He brought him in an environment where, you know, Trey Hume could take on a lot of the pressure in that particular game. And Pembele's been better for being brought in at the right time. And he's got a little bit of a platform to move forward. So I think we should give... He's also done a decent job in terms of integrating Rig. I think, although I want to see Rig in midfield in the long run, obviously, because that's his position, I think it's made sense to do what he's done with him. And I think Rig's had a good taste of it and will have a better understanding of sort of the intensity when he does move into midfield. So maybe we should give Dodds a little bit of credit in terms of he'll pick the right moment to introduce Watson. But I really hope he does because, you know, we've both seen flashes of him. He's really exciting talent. Mm-hmm. He's kind of freakishly similar to Jack Clark. It's like really weird.
His goal last night, if you watch it, like Jack Clark could have scored that. It's very, very, very similar to what Clark would do.
Yeah, definitely. So I'd be really disappointed if we got to the end of the season and Watson hadn't had a bit of a goal, whether even if it's just off the bench in a couple of the games. But I think it will happen. I think it will happen. I can understand why. I don't think Leeds and West Brom personally were the best games to do it, especially not, as I say, given the fact that he's been coming back from an injury himself.
No, absolutely agree. Another Sunderland youngster that I'd like to quickly talk about before the end of the podcast, Phil, is Sunderland goalkeeper Matty Young on loan at Darlington. They've avoided relegation from the National League North under former Newcastle player Steve Watson. A remarkable turnaround. Everybody at Darlington, fans, players, management, they're all raving about Young and his impact. 17 years old, Sunderland's goalkeeping position, sort of first team position with Anthony Patterson is pretty solid, although there's a minor question mark in the summer. But yeah, just a very, very exciting footballer to have and could well go on loan again next season. I don't think he's going to play the first team for Sunderland anytime soon in terms of the next season or so. I just think he's a little bit too young, but a massively exciting prospect.
Yeah, really, really, really exciting prospect. And I think his development has been pretty rapid, I think, over the last sort of year or so. What I would say is that I agree with you. I think he's unlikely to be sort of a first team player next season just because of his age. But I think he's pretty likely to be a first team player in pre-season. So, I mean, I think realistically, I can't see Alex Bass sort of coming back to the club. I would imagine he'll look to move on after a good year at Wimbledon. I think there'll be some question marks over Nathan Bishop, because I think obviously he came into the club knowing that he was going to be back up to Anthony Patterson, but at some point he'll want to go and play. So I do think in pre-season I'd be absolutely stunned if we didn't see Matty Young play a few games, to be honest. And I think from Sunderland's perspective, there'll be absolutely no need to rush him out the door on a loan move. I think you can bring him back in, you can train regularly with the first team group, you can play, you can go on the trip, I would imagine, to Spain, be around that environment. And then a little bit later, as the season approaches, you can then take a step back and go, right, what's his level? What's the right next move? So I think it's just a real good position for Sunderland to be in, to be honest. But he is, like, you know, the reports from Darlington, as you mentioned, and that he's had an absolute massive impact in a difficult scenario. And, you know, the National League North is a good level, and it's a very challenging level for a goalkeeper of his age to go into. So it's incredibly exciting for the club. And then, you know, we have to give, again, you know, we've probably mentioned it a lot over the years, but Mark Prudder, the sort of goalkeeping guru, like, his track record is absolutely out of this world.
Everybody speaks so highly of that man.
And his record speaks for itself. And it's not just Matt Young either. There's some really other talented, really young goalkeepers in the group as well. So, yeah, a position of real strength, I think, for Sunderland. I think realistically, as you mentioned, there's obviously that slight question mark over Patterson, because somebody could come in from this summer, given where he's at and the progress he's already made. I still think even in that situation, it might be a little bit too soon for Matty Young. I think because obviously, you know, going in, even Patterson had a bit of time out on loan, didn't he, at Notts County in the Football League before. He was very young, obviously, coming to the team in League One, but he had played a bit in Notts County, and I think he'd be the first to tell you that exposure was really, really important for him. So that, I think, either a National League or a Football League loan first is going to be really important for Young. But yeah, I think the future is really, really bright for him. And you know, one of the things we have to say is, as well, rightly so, we criticise a lot of the decisions that are made and the way the season's gone and stuff. Like, I do think there are some really exciting signs in the academy at the moment, and some really good talent coming through. And you know, we have to recognise that as well. And I think Young's got a massive chance. It's that kind of team, isn't it? If they nearly beat Man City to the under-18s league last year. And, you know, it's a real, looks to be a bit of a, hopefully they can all deliver on their promise, but it looks to be a bit of a gem of a sort of generation, doesn't it? When you've got Rigg, Young, I know Mason Koch has obviously left, but he was another who was in that group as well. So yeah, it's going to be really exciting to watch their progress, because it feels like there's a handful of them in that team who could really do something special.
Yeah, just to underline your point there, it's really positive as well that Sunderland actually have Matty Young on a professional contract, and they've built that sort of side of the academy. Yes, it's not a hard and fast rule that Sunderland will retain every promising youngster. We've seen Toby Bell, and Mason Kocher. But by and large, the contrast from the Donald and Methven era is pretty stark now.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the track record has improved. And again, like I mentioned before about sort of the, you know, I can get into it and you'll be the same, into a bit of a summer bubble and stuff. Like, every club outside the top six or eight struggles to keep their best young players. And even at the very top level, sometimes players switch. Do you know what I mean? I know in some ways it's a ludicrous comparison, but like Cole Palmer, like, sometimes young players just decide to move. They have their own reasons and they want to take opportunities. So, and there's always, like, sometimes there are like factors where it's not necessarily anybody's fault. It's just something that happens. And the example we would use, I think, James, would be Josh Robertson's an obvious one, where he opted to go to Brighton, which was obviously really disappointing from a Sunderland's perspective. But you have to be realistic about the fact that he plays kind of in a similar position to Chris Rigg, right? Yeah. So, and maybe in a year's time, a really promising young goalkeeper would look at Matty Young and think, you know,
time to go.
So do you know what I mean? So, like, there's always like loads of factors that make it happen, and I think it is definitely something that has been steadily improving. Tommy Watson himself is someone who could definitely have gone last season, you know, and opted to stay. I'm sure he'll be hoping for opportunities next year. Otherwise, he will definitely be considering his future, because he's good enough to play. But I think generally speaking, it's like, it's definitely a positive, and it's something that especially us who sort of report on the team and sort of hold the club to account is something we've got to factor in as well, that there is a balance, because you can't, if you want to keep young players, you have to play them. And there is a consequence for playing young players, and you can't have it both ways. You can't have a team full of established players and then expect to keep young players when there's no pathway for them. So there is a balance, and we really, you know, we all need to be mindful of recognizing that. At the same time, I think it's fair to say that the balance hasn't been right this year. It's been too extreme. And in a lot of the young players' cases, it hasn't really helped them because there's been too much pressure on them. And to be fair, you know, I mentioned before about Mike Dodds, really interesting speaking about the planning for next season. Bit of an indication from him that the penny has kind of dropped a little bit behind the scenes, and there is a bit of a recognition. I know he certainly feels that for much of his tenure, the team has been too young, you know, and we're talking someone whose background is in youth development. So there's no bigger advocate than him for pushing youth forward. But even he sort of said, you know, realistically to compete at this level, there needs to be a bit of a better balance. So yeah, it's going to be a really interesting summer in all of these cases, Ruud.
Absolutely. Well, we'll bring an end to it there because we've gone way over time, but that was a great chat. Phil, thanks for joining us. Sunderland next up against Millwall on Saturday. Watford after that away. Then rounding off the season against Sheffield Wednesday at home. We'll have all the build-up to those three remaining games in the Championship, including podcasts and everything from Mike Dodds. Phil, once again, thank you for joining us. Thanks to the listener, and cheers for listening to the Raw Podcast.